Hey, Josh.
Hey Nate, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. I just started using Asana the other day. I know you're a big fan of them. So I am slowly getting used to doing all of my to-dos and all of my recurring tasks in that management system. So I've been having fun with that. Other than
Okay.
that, life's pretty much the same.
Cool. Is it just on a personal level and work level, like, do you have a client that has sort of brought you into that sphere or?
Well, I started using it because I've been using Todoist, and this is for like personal and for work. I've been using Todoist, and I found that the some of the task management, when you get like a lot of tasks and like tagging and organizing and stuff like that, gets to be a little cumbersome. And so I switched over for that reason, and I had heard others say good things about it, so I figured I'd give it a try.
Cool.
How are things with you?
Good. We're, I guess past the midpoint of the summer. Let's see. I know we did a few weeks of stacked recordings and then we both had some time away. So I was at the beach with the kids and it's always fun. You get to have a cousin play time. Like if you have people that have cousins, it's just like that's almost, I don't know, pretty great thing for families is like hanging out with cousins.
That's special.
Yeah, so did that. Actually, I saw a couple people from our Slack group down there, met some people for coffee and breakfast as well, and so it was cool. Yeah, been
Nice.
doing well.
Oh, it sounds like a good time. You sound like all, you're all chill now. You've lowered all your stress, ready to get back into things.
Yeah, I would say that summer's always weird, as you probably know. Just I don't know. I don't remember how many of your kids are like school age. Like it's so,
I've got one.
just basically, massive changes to routines, and then even the trip to the beach, and then you kind of come back, and then you're sort of like when you come back from any trip or any sort of disruption, you're playing catch up and whatnot, and then just trying to get back in a groove. So, periods of adjustment, but it seems like, summer is the consistent period of adjustments all the time. Just like something comes up, you take holidays, you do other stuff, and that's fine. And I think everyone in the world kind of is at this time. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it takes some getting used to, I guess, when you're used to, routine and getting things done and all.
Right. Yep.
So what do you want to talk about today?
So yeah, I've been doing, I think as you know, I think I brought it up in a couple other podcast episodes, just even more general marketing exploratory efforts. And some of my podcast and internet travels have landed me in a couple different places, but the one of the people that I think I've heard of before and then heard him on a podcast that I've been enjoying lately. And his name is Dave Kellogg. Have you ever heard of Dave Kellogg?
No.
So it's another one of these gems, like finding I would say, finding like Jason Cohen's blog, like that type of thing where you just you're the person, they write prolifically. They are, I don't know, most of the stuff they write are pretty, what's the word, just kind of evergreen-ish, so they're and they're largely thinks in models and in different ways. So definitely check out his blog. He actually has a really nice section where he has like a best of that he I think updates maybe like once a year or something like that. So it's sort of like, hey, instead of trolling around through everything reading from the beginning of time, here's what keeps coming up. Here's the ever more evergreen topics. Now, maybe I haven't read everything. Right, I definitely haven't read everything, but maybe there's probably clunkers in there that he just doesn't highlight. Maybe you're, if you go through an archive basis, maybe you'll run across. But the reason I bring that up is so he was on a podcast and And we'll link in the show notes the episode. It was on a podcast called The Name. The name is going to escape me. I think it's something really a startup brand, standout startups, something like that. I really enjoy the podcast. It's there's two hosts, but they usually trade off who's doing the interviewing, but they're all interviewing different people. But it's more on this, in this area of more brand versus just like, you know, demand capture or demand gen type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Dave Kellogg came on the blog and definitely listened to that episode, drops a ton of gems, but one of the ones he talks about is this like trying to sell to different types of audiences. And basically, what are you trying to accomplish with your messaging? And he gives two great examples in this general concept of, are you trying to convince a larger audience to buy like one of the thing you're selling? Mm-hmm. Or they try, like, meaning kind of a category of software or whatever it is you're selling? Or are you trying to get them to buy yours specifically? And where a company, depending on the stage, depending on things like, you know, words like category creation, all that other stuff, like, is it a existing market that is well known? Or mm-hmm. is it something kind of new and novel that you have to convince people of the value, not just convince them why yours is better and different, if that makes sense.
Right. So maybe it's like the difference between selling windshield wipers to car owners versus like trying to sell a new device to an older person that doesn't want to have a new device. Right. So you gotta convince people to buy the new device, but to get windshield wipers, everyone's like, yeah, no, I just need that. You know,
right.
That makes a lot of sense. You have like very different, right. very different styles of marketing with that. That makes sense.
Or maybe like the other one, I like your analogy is like windshield wipers for the front. Make perfect sense, and everyone knows that. But maybe windshield wipers for the sides.
There you go.
You know, why do I even need one? Right. So that's really that the mass market question, or the I would say the larger set of the audience. Right. So like, is there a large swath of people that are understand and know and need the thing, and now you're trying to convince them to buy yours versus like trying to buy any of them at all, any of the ones in the category.
Okay.
And he uses a great example. He has these two marketing messages, and it's called the two different ones are so he says, you know, Southwest slogan, you know, Southwest Airlines, their slogan is like bags fly free.
Okay.
Which is a why buy ours, right? Why buy mine?
Yeah.
Because it's differentiating across all the other airlines. That's their differentiator, or a big one that they want you to remember.
Right. And you already have to fly. Yeah.
What's that?
You already have to want, like, know a little bit about flying even to know that, right? Like someone who has never flown before or even thought about flying wouldn't mean anything.
Yeah. But I guess the point is that you have to, if you're going to stake your claim out with one sort of marketing message, one thing that you want to be known for, and you only have like 10 seconds to tell someone, what are you telling them? Right. Yeah. So like, if you're trying to convince them that flying is a good thing, right? Like that's an early market. That's a, like, it's a totally different thing where you actually have to spend more time educating the market than you do convincing them that yours is the right one. So
yeah,
you're right in that fact, but I think the airlines aren't at this point in a business of trying to convince people to fly versus take a train.
Right.
They're just really just saying why within flying. Does that matter?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But the other example of the trying to convince in a category he has is a famous Campbell's soup slogan from the 70s, which used to be soup is good food. Right. So it was like convincing that soup could be a healthy alternative. And at that point in time, you know, maybe soup wasn't as popular, or at least like, you know, the pre-made from a can variety. Anyway,
yeah.
But those are the examples he uses. And I like those because I think most people know them, right? Like most people probably heard of those. So,
yeah, that's really interesting because like the soup example, it's like they're basically trying to build the market as opposed to my market.
Right.
versus the airline is saying, no, there's a radial market. I want to stake my flag on this part of the market. And this is why you should, you know, be a part of that section.
Right. Right. Or Oatly is like a recent one, right? Oat milk.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Right. So like their whole thing has been more about like what, why even oat milk, right? Mm-hmm. Like has been, I think is probably more of their messaging is around that because, and then once you're in that, they are also convincing you that they are the category leader type of thing. Yeah. So it's sort of a different play in that they're not, but they also, it's sort of this crossover, you know, the name milk, even though it's not milk, right?
Yeah,
almond milk is not milk. Like all these other things that have categorized themselves in the milk category. It's like mm-hmm. that, you know, now you're getting into like subcategories or whatever, like transient, like how do you bridge mm-hmm. some level of familiarity to the right thing?
Right. And this is maybe why, like, a lot of, if you don't have a lot of money, it's a lot better to go into an existing market where you can say, I'm going to plant my flag on this existing subset of people, as opposed to trying to convince everyone to come to the category and then hoping that they'll come to you, right? Like if you're going to enter the soup market back in the, when the Campbell's was running that thing, it's like, you're also competing with all the other soup people. And then you're telling people just eat soup. And it's like, well, you better hope they're going to pick yours. After you've already, you know, spent all this effort convincing them to have soup in the first place.
Right. Yeah. I like that thinking about that. Cause it makes you think sort of like, let's think backwards. How can this be successful? Right. So then you start thinking about what is my bigger challenge is going to be. And I think it's good for startup or indie hackers or whatever, wherever you want to start a business to start from is kind of going, am I going to spend more of my time convincing people that this is, you know, convincing that there's value in this, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, do I want to spend more time on like, hey, mine's a better way to do X, right? Like, type of thing.
Yeah, I think I've gotten tripped up on this with like the testing stuff I've been working on, where to me, a lot of the time as a developer, I feel like I need to be convincing people that testing is a good idea to begin with, but not thinking about the fact that there is a whole market already for testing. And this is a known thing by a certain group of people. And so, you know, almost deciding, am I going for the, you need to test in my 10 seconds that I get to say something? Or am I going for, this is why you should choose my way of testing?
Right.
And I've definitely gotten tripped up in that. And I still have a hard time with that because it feels like in so many ways, there's so many detractors from testing. And maybe that's just social media versus just trying to find, you know, the existing people that, you know, already believe in testing.
Right. So for finding an audience with aligned values, not having to convince them of value, it's like, what do they already intrinsically believe? Right. So, and you want to lean into that versus trying to convince them to care about something, right? Like it's a much, much tougher hill to climb, right? You have to think about like, I want to look for the easy modes. Like, what do people already believe? What do they believe from a belief system? What do they like already convinced and know that like email marketing is a thing, right? Like you're not, no one's surprised about, you know, getting emails, and at least from a consumer basis, it spread quickly because you've been on the receiving end. So even if you're new to business, you know, email this marketing, that's a good thing. Now, who knows? Maybe on the flip side, there could be the small percentage of people that have gotten emails and are just irate with getting emails, and they might never, it would just like grate on them, and they become more of a, I'm going to have a business, but I'm never going to do email marketing because I've just been so passionately burned from an intrinsic value perspective. I just believe that's a crappy way to do business. Right.
So yeah. And I guess that's where it gets.
I'm sure there's people out there that have done that. Like, I'm going to create a business, but I'm not going to do email marketing. I think people do it today. I want to do a business, but I don't want to do any social media. And I am like, I hate social media, and not me personally, but I think there are people like that. And then they sort of use their own hatred or experience or as a value for them, and just sort of makes it like, I'm just taking that off the table because I can't stand for it. I don't want to even support it. Right. Cause that means if I'm in it, I'm part of the
problem. Yeah. I can definitely have heard that sentiment as well. Yeah. I think though it becomes a very different, like you're talking about the different messages of like educating people about the market versus within the market. And I wonder though, if a lot of us actually do end up working more in the why choose me over the competitor sort of marketing situation because of the nature of our businesses. Like I just think of like the testing market, for example, or even like software consulting. In my narrow, you know, field of view, it's like, it seems like that is the thing to do is like, how do I compare to all these other people? You know, there's like a bazillion other options for people who will build you software, or bazillion other options for people who will do testing for you. And so how do you, you know, stand out in those situations?
Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, so like that, then you just have a different problem, right? So then that's the thing, is it an education? That's not an education problem, right? That's mm-hmm. a differentiation problem, right? That's standing out problem among a crowd. So it's the flip side of it. It's like, hey, there's a ton of people that want stuff, mm-hmm. but why are they going to look at me, right? And on the other side is like, there aren't a lot of other people, but I have these distinct advantages, but there aren't a lot of people. So I'm actually going to spend more time convincing the market. And if the market's actually even there, if there's enough people willing to pay there, I'm mm-hmm. trudging into, you know, different new territory. So it's definitely a trade-off decision to make. And I would bet that, you know, most people are trying to create the buy one of these, you know, not just mine. Mm-hmm. Are gonna, especially for people that are, like we've talked about, under-resourced, right? Like, are gonna have a much harder time, right?
Yeah.
Without a big budget.
Well, and I wonder if you can even compare like activities too. Like, if you think of like on an education sort of problem where you're trying to convince people to buy any, you know, thing in the category, I wonder if that looks a lot more like, you know, you're doing these like conference talks, you're doing more of these like higher level education sorts of things, or like webinars or instructional videos, versus like if you're in more of a differentiation mode where you're trying to, you know, pick me versus my competitor, you're doing more things like you're doing like comparison analysis pages, you're doing like getting your ratings on G2 or some platform like that with reviews and that sort of thing. And it becomes more about like trust and more about you know, showing the comparison information to people. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's more to it?
I mean, even before you get into the comparison, it almost gets back to like, you know, thinking about seven powers and that type of thing. So if you are going to be against incumbents, what who are the actual incumbents, right? Who and how mm-hmm. can you stand out there? So I think it gets baked into like how you see the world with your product, first of all, versus even so before you go into like, tactically, how do I compare? It was like, tactically, which road did you choose? I think mm-hmm. it even goes into the early days of choosing the problem you're solving. Can you do it in a unique way, right? So like mm-hmm. you might go in there as like, yeah, at the end, if part of my strategy is to convince people to buy mine, but I don't have actually a convincing way to say it, then, you know,
yeah, you're stuck.
Don't even start there. Or you should. Sometimes this stuff is, we start things for many different reasons, not all these logical ones about the market, but yeah.
I've actually been thinking about that a bit with my testing product, because my initial thought with the testing product is, well, people want their testing and they want it now. And, you know, slowness or fastness is important. But as I'm like researching what a lot of these testing companies care about, that would be a differentiator, but it doesn't seem to be one that's often talked about. And so it's kind of one of these things of, I wonder if like that'll actually hold up, or if there needs to be, you know, maybe these other things they care about are just table stakes, and I have to get those out of the way. And then, you know, the speed.
Right. Well, I mean, it goes back to that initial question. Do they actually want it now?
Do they actually want testing? Period.
Right. You just said you thought your thesis was that people would want the tests now. Right. And also mm-hmm. I think if I recall, part of this was also interesting from a technological standpoint, like
you're
drawn to hard problems. You love the hard problems and especially technically hard problems. So it's sort of like, no one else seems to solve this nut. I think I can crack
this
nut, right? And then here's the other question. Was the nut worth cracking, right? Is that,
yeah.
Which again, from a logical standpoint, not from a like,
you know, yeah, yeah. philosophical.
Different state.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So. But no, it's definitely interesting, and I think there's a lot of, and I would say, like, the challenge is there's a lot of like false signals out there, right? Because like one I would say maybe this is a false signal is like you're just enamored by the problem, right? Like it's not to say it's wrong. It's just like, is that signal or is that real signal that there's a business around this? It's not that the problem isn't worth it, but is it worth something to people? Right? Because like another one I saw recently that I would also maybe categorize as a, maybe we'll call it false. We'll call it like questionable. So Ruben Gomez had a tweet, I think a couple days ago, and he's here. We'll link this as well. He's like, a mistake many founders make, the amount of traction / interest in the early stages is not an accurate indicator of how successful something is going to be. Many fast starters burn out and plateau. Things like stickiness, frequency, expansion, word of mouth, etc., are better indicators. And then you have a couple people in the comments, which is kind of fun. A guy says, true, once I launched a UX tool, thousands of signups, big names, no one wanted to pay though. It's kind of one of these things is like, you know, you've probably heard this before, but you know, all that glitters isn't gold, but you can easily get excited like, hey, I got all these people to sign up, like it made it to the front page of TechCrunch, it's top of Hacker News, all these things. It just means it's novel. It doesn't mean it's necessarily like gonna hit a value.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It's like that whole hype thing too, right? Or just, you know, I think in the indie world, you know, a little bit of just wanting other people to succeed too, right? Like I've definitely seen people where they've got a startup that's, you know, kind of seems questionable, the premise of it. And everyone's like, oh, it's so great. You know, you're doing your thing and whatever. And, you know, people are just genuinely happy that someone's trying something and it's not necessarily based on, you know, is there intrinsic value in this thing? And I think I've actually been thinking about that more with my testing product too, because I'm starting to think about how am I marketing this, because I'm starting to get to the point where the technical problem is starting to be mostly solved. And so trying to think about how am I going to market this and how am I going to position? And it's like, no, you got to figure out like, what do these people actually already say they care about? And like, you know, what seems to be true, what seems to be false, and make sure I'm aligning with those things instead of just what I think. Cause I think that's always my problem with these startups, whereas like, I would do it this way. I think this way is so much better. And the market's just like, no, we don't, we do it this way. So.
Right. Now it's an interesting, it's an interesting comment about that. Cause I think about this often, at least with, you know, with Referral Rock, and we're in this kind of in between, I would say, you know, when we started this episode talking about the why buy one versus why buy ours, I feel like we're often having both of those conversations because it's not as slam dunk, like I don't as like email marketing or like forum software or all these other things. Like people have their use cases. They know it, you know, maybe they might also know, you know, whatever they put into it, like, is what they're going to get out of it. Like, forum software is a good example. It's more of a tool, but I don't blame the forum software for not working if I put up a bad survey, right? Or a bad, like, set of questions. I mean, obviously, they could be technically, like, offline and not working. Then I might blame them. And same thing with email. Email might be a little different. Sometimes there's deliverability and some other issues. But for the most part, I know I'm bringing the email list. I'm writing the content. It's not really the platform's fault. There are certain things platform is beholden to, but for the most part, like, and then what I would do is I just switch to another email provider. It's not, I would switch to a more convincing why buy mine, right? Maybe my specific problems that I ran into were that, but going back to your point, which was you were saying about like, this is the way I'd solve it. And I think there is, and that, I think that, it's actually a very good trait because you look at, again, let's say email service providers, And they, there's so much there. There's so much of an audience there that they actually are looking for the voice that says, I do it this way. And this is the right way.
Yeah.
And my software speaks to that. My software is prescriptive in that. So if you believe this is the way to do email, like I'm the one for you. Right. And that's a compelling thing. And with a large enough market, you know,
right.
You know, there are people that are going to align with that, that intrinsic value that this is the way to do email marketing, right? Versus this is the Legos of email marketing put together how you want. What you end up with is I have to put it all together. Like,
yeah.
And to someone, to the benefit of the engineer type of person, it's like, oh man, Legos are awesome. I could build whatever I want. And then you go in for the person that is not a builder and they're like, oh, you mean I have to build everything I want? Right.
Yeah.
That thing, that same value prop is a flipped kind of argument.
Yeah, and I wonder if that works also when you have something that's a bigger part of a business, like email marketing is a pretty big deal, versus like, I don't know, maybe like there are other softwares that you use in your day to day that you just don't care to figure out. And it's just like, I just have to use this thing just for, you know, 2 hours a week or whatever it is. And like, I don't want to mess around with it. Like using Riverside, for example, it's like, you're not going to like do crazy research on all of the online recording systems. Maybe you are if you're really passionate about it. But if you just want to record and you just want to get on with it, you know, sometimes you're not willing to do that depth of analysis. And that's why I think there's a bit of a differentiation there is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right. Yeah. And some of the things that just on the very surface level, like, do you like the UX? Could you pick it up quickly, right? If you go in there and it seems kind of cumbersome and doesn't think the way things aren't placed where you think they should be placed, like that, you know, that would stop someone from even just, you know, and a lot of these types of recording software all have trials, all have like, hey, you know, record up to 10 hours for free or like record one recording a month for free or whatever. But that goes in there kind of go to market and how they structure into more of their like funnel and how to convert people, but also very much aligned with their product point of view.
Yeah. And I actually noticed that with I was listening to a podcast where someone was talking about using one of the people I plan to compete with in testing. And they talked about how this company had made basically like a self-serve entrance to their testing system. Whereas a lot of people, you have to, you know, book a demo and you have to like, you know, go through all this paperwork, you have to write all these RFQs and, you know, all that sort of thing. And this person had just changed it to be like, no, you could just get started right away. You can use our automated recorder. You know, you can just write some notes in here and there. And that was enough to kind of get people going and in the door. And that company has grown really well with that model. And so just, you know, you can see how these different takes, you know, affect different people. And it's nice to learn from somebody else's mistakes or attempts. So that way when, you know, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah. So there was another article kind of related. I haven't dug as much into it, but this kind of is almost an approach of solving the, you know, if we talked about like those two layers of why buy one and why buy mine, and then like, what is the best thing that kind of cuts through all of the noise, right? If you're going to have a conversation that kind of gets someone all the way from why buy one through to why buy mine, you know, and this other one that I've been, you know, reading about is also like their whole thesis on this is like, why buy now? Right. Where, and so that's like another one is the ones that even if it is a why buy one, it's a like, why is it urgent? Right. Why does this, what makes it urgent enough that they're going to shoot through the, like, once it hits them, they're like, oh yeah, I totally need one of these. And, like you've convinced me that I do, and now they've accelerated their journey, right? Because even if it's, hey, yeah, you know, travel, airplanes versus like trains, but yeah, I don't have a trip planned up. I don't have any reason to travel or even care, yep. you know, and so Bags Fly Free makes zero sense to me. But at the same time, you talk to a Southwest rep and they're like, yeah, flying. Okay, I could see flying. Yeah, maybe if I'm going to take a trip, but, you know, whatever. but without an urgency, right? So maybe it's like a why buy now could also be a change in the world, right? Some other things that align with current events. So it might be like, you're not getting any younger. You're like, you're, you know, you're retired now, or you've done your time in the workforce, and, you know, have you always wanted to travel and like see the world before, like, you know, you die? I don't know. But that becomes like a why buy now on travel or something like yeah. that. But that's kind of where I'm starting to think about from, again, just talking about our own challenges, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because again, like I said, we're sort of a little old, because there's enough SEO queries that people know what referral marketing is. People know what we do. It's rare that we're convincing them. It's also just be like, well, why do I need it now? And also, mm-hmm. like, I we're often fighting the alternative, which is like, do I even really need one? And why mm-hmm. do I need it now? So that's kind of the stuff that yeah. I'm starting to study up on, as like, okay, if I'm in this middling area, how do I transcend them both with messaging, right?
Yeah, that's hard to have both of them at the same time. Sure. You gotta find like, yeah. you know, the Venn diagram of.
And the reality is, maybe I'm wrong and there is no way through, and I just have to pick a horse and go harder on yeah. that area. So.
Or it's you're very focused on where you're sending each of those messages, right? Like that you're finding ways to segment that group.
Right.
And then using your more generic, isn't that whole thing about like brands, as they get bigger, they get more generic because they've got all these different use cases. And so they have to kind of be generic until you can segment out, and then you can start to be more specific.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where you start seeing them making more just emotional plays at the top, which is like, we're the ones that do this, right? Or just like, and it starts to get further away. And I think that's the challenge, is like, most people maybe aren't, you know, something might be working in the early days, but it does change, right? But also, you don't want to think, oh, we're so big that now we don't even need to talk about what we do on our homepage, right? So that's sort of, and I think that does happen, because it drifts, because it's like, no, we're about this big thing. Like, we're big now. Yeah. We're like, we're about, you know, changing the world, not just like, you know, that type of stuff. So I think those are the traps that you can fall into with marketing. But I think you're right. Like, where you send this messaging. And I think that's where a lot of that podcast I've been listening to has been putting more of a stronger distinction on like on brand building. And it's sort of like, well, here's why brand building is important. And this is what sort of creates your future. And I think you hear a lot of people talking about brand advertising versus like demand capture, like getting people to convert that are already interested in the thing, which is that why buy mine, right? Versus the other is like, how do you even let them know you exist, or let them know this category exists to possibly sell to them in the future? So you are what, you know, Pep says, like, in their consideration set when they are ready to shop, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that's right. You're saying the right thing at the right time to the right person, I guess. That's tricky stuff to figure out.
It is. Or how do you say it? I think this was a good one where, you know, I re-listened to our Chris Savage episode like a week or so ago, and just some of those points that he made that were really interesting too. And the fact that they've been in the game for so long, right? So sort of like, there's a natural, like, they just have a natural engine of customers that have heard of them or used them over the past, you know, 15 years or so, right? So that's this advantage, like slow building advantage that a startup's not going to have in its first year or two. It's just part of being in the game for that long. You're going to have some of that. But I remember him emphasizing a certain point, which was not necessarily like saying the right thing at the right time, but being in that consideration says, how are you memorable, right? And how are you, he mentioned that the phrase like time with brand, which I never really thought of until he said that, which is like the video, you know, they did that 110, 100 and things like that. And it's like, oh, wow, the fact that, you know, and again, we're talking about it again because it was interesting and it was the people that sat and watched that, you know, movie. I don't even remember how long it was. It was probably like at least an hour, maybe 2 hours long for a documentary. Mm-hmm. And you spend that long with the brand. And the whole time they're talking about Wistia and they're talking about like behind mm-hmm. the scenes, but you're learning about the different ways videos are made for those different budgets. But the whole time it's about a Wistia product. And it's like, if you don't walk away remembering Wistia for that, like, even though maybe that's the only thing someone saw. And then 5 years later, they're going to, what was that one that did that? You know, so that time with brand versus just frequency and continuously. The other way to do it is they have a Wistia billboard outside your house and you see it every day.
Yeah, right. That's going to cost a fortune.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Well, this has been really cool. I haven't thought about this quite as much, I think, as you have, and it's helpful to get the brain going on it.
Cool. All right. Well, anything else on your mind?
No, that's good for today. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Bye.
See ya. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups, or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.